It's okay. You can talk. That would be okay. Hello? My name is Michael Flake. I am the campus pastor here at Lake Forest Davidson. We are very, very glad that you are here this week. As every week at Lake Forest Davidson, we're going to do two things. We'll teach out of the Bible and we'll teach in the round. We teach out of the Bible because we believe it's God's word to us. It's where he tells us who he is and how we should live. It is not God. The Bible is not God, but it is the primary tool through which God shapes us into who he would have us to be. So we're going to teach out of the Bible, and we're going to teach in the round. We teach in the round because we prefer circles to rows. Nobody is here today watching a play. If you're here today and you're a spiritual skeptic or a spiritual explorer or a follower of Christ, all of us together, and we assume all of those categories are represented today, all of us are in this thing together. We are all part of what's happening here today. And so the connection that you make with God is far more important than the connection you make with me as the speaker. And so I may not keep eye contact with you the entire time because we think the primary connection you're here to make today is to God. And as you look continually at the center of these circles, we want you to ask yourself the question, what is at the center of my life? What is the thing, the person, the idea that everything else in my world revolves around? I want to say a special hello to Davidson students, especially to the first-year students in the midst of the draggingest orientation there is. I was a Davidson student once upon a time, graduated in 2006, majored in math and religion, I know. So I look forward to getting to know you. Whether this is the church you settle at or not, I look forward to getting to know you. Let me say a brief word. This comes out of my experience. This is sort of the big brother hat on for a minute. This comes out of my experience as a Davidson student, as a hall counselor, as a senior, and then just watching it generally. In college, your faith will start, strengthen, or shipwreck. It will not stay the same. In college, your faith will start, strengthen, or shipwreck. It will not stay the same. And so I commend you for being here. On your first Sunday out of the gate, I encourage you to come back. If you are a follower of Christ, if you are searching for truth, continue to take spiritual things seriously. And don't be afraid to reach out to me or to anyone else you see sitting around you. Well, meeting at Davidson Elementary reminds me of the great jokes that I used to tell when I was in elementary school. Hey! Why was the bad student's report card all wet? It was below sea level. Popsicle stick quality joke right there. I have one goal today, and it is simple. It is to introduce you to Jesus Christ. I want to try to paint as full a picture as I can of who he is and who he was and why it matters. No matter what you know about Jesus, you may not know anything about Jesus, but no matter what you know about Jesus, it is my hope that you are willing to see all of who Jesus is. In all of his complexity, both the parts of Jesus you like and the parts of Jesus you don't like, both the parts of Jesus that encourage you and the parts of Jesus that challenge you. I don't simply want you to learn about a historical figure. I want us to encounter Jesus today, and maybe even be changed by him. In our series, Introducing, we are exploring together four accounts from the Bible to show people who encountered Jesus. And it is my hope that as we explore those passages together, you too will encounter Jesus. You will be introduced to Jesus in all of his complexity, and you will never be the same again. So today we are studying Mark 2, which we read earlier. You can follow along. There should be Bibles around you if you'd like to follow in Mark 2. They have Bibles on your phones if you would prefer that. If I see you typing on your phone, I will assume you're taking notes. So you'll remember, people hear that Jesus has returned to his town and they flock to him. They swarm into the house where Jesus is. So many people that the room is packed. People are spilling out of the door. So many people want to hear and see Jesus. There is something captivating about him. And these four men come carrying a man on a mat. They know that Jesus can heal this man if only they can get the man to Jesus. These four men have faith. Faith can be defined a bunch of ways, but here's how we'll define it this morning. These four men have faith. They trust that Jesus can heal. This is their plan A, and there is no plan B. If there had been a plan B, don't you think that they, when they get to the house and people are spilling out of the doors, that they would have enacted plan B? They could have just turned around and left. They could have found some other holy man and hoped for the best. But try to get inside their heads. Try to experience their faith. No plan B was anything compared to the plan A. We have to get this man on the mat to the feet of Jesus by any means necessary. Jesus can heal this man, and this man needs it now. Now, this says a lot to me about these four people, but it also says a lot to me about Jesus. It says a lot about the one who was standing in that house teaching. If you had been standing in that crowd on that day, right beyond the threshold of the door, listening to Jesus, maybe you would have been captivated by what he was saying. Maybe you would have been a little tired and nodding off a little bit. But then imagine you take a look over to your side and you see some guys climbing up on the roof. And then you see a few other folks struggling and lifting up this man who's laying on a mat. And you start to put it all together and you realize, oh my gosh, those guys are planning to go through the roof. And part of you starts looking for the homeowners. They are going to flip out. But perhaps you also look back into the house, into the eyes of that man who is teaching. And you have to ask yourself, who is this Jesus that people would climb on a roof and destroy a house to get someone to his feet? And as you stand there looking into those eyes, you realize that Jesus and everyone else in that house is starting to look up. Some wonder, what's that racket on the roof? While some eyes grow very large as they see small pieces of the roof falling. But before anyone can ask too many questions, there is a new skylight in the house and there is a mat being lowered down. People are trying to understand what's going on, but then from underneath, people can see the contours on the mat. And the contours on the mat tell the story. There's a person on that mat. There is a person being lowered down. There is a person about to encounter Jesus. I don't know about you, but I'm struck that Jesus doesn't say anything about the roof. He is far more concerned about the man making the contours on the mat. If Jesus' primary concern had been property values, I think he would have said something about the roof. If Jesus' primary concern had been politeness and teaching people to be upstanding citizens, I think he would have said something about the roof. But Jesus is far more concerned about people than property values or polite citizenship. What about you? What sits at the center of your life? Well, as the man on the mat reaches the ground, I can only imagine what he sees. He's looking around, surrounded by people, all doing what people have always done. They look down on him. They were staring in shock at him. Mommy, what's wrong with that man? He had no way of providing for himself. As always, he could only hope that the people who looked down on him could find some pity for him. Did any of these sets of eyes belong to someone who would show pity? And as I imagined it, he looked from person to person when he stopped on one set of eyes. This man was looking at him, yes, but he was more so looking into him. So many people had pity because they saw the difficulty of his outside condition. But the man on the mat could see in Jesus' eyes, he had compassion because he could see the turmoil of his inside condition. And then come the words that blow the whole story open. And I hope they blow fresh life into you today. In the confusion of the entire scene, everything is broken open with five words. Son, your sins are forgiven. And these words set off a variety of reactions. Some of the religious leaders standing near Jesus start shooting those glances to each other. Can he say that? How can he forgive sins? Only God can forgive sins. And Jesus jumps into their conversation and says, essentially, you want to see that I can forgive sins? I'll tell you what. I'll tell this man to walk. Then will you believe? And turning to the man, not looking at him, but looking into him, he said, get up, take your mat, go home. And the Bible simply tells us that he did it. He got up, he took his mat, and he went home. And the people are stunned, and they say, we've never seen anything like this. I really wish the Bible told us more. What about the folks on the roof? What about the homeowner? Did the people want to hear more teaching, or did they just run after the healed man who was walking away? The Bible doesn't tell us a lot of these things, but it does tell us a lot. And I want to point out a few of the things it's showing us. It's trying to make the point, first of all, Jesus is both a person and God. Jesus is both a person and God. You'll remember that the religious leaders establish only God can forgive sins. And so when Jesus forgives sins and then makes clear to these leaders he has authority to forgive sins, he's making a clear point. And that clear point, the religious leaders clearly understood, this Jesus thinks he's God. And as a follower of Jesus Christ, I don't simply say that Jesus thinks he's God. Jesus is God. Jesus is a person like you or me. He was born, he went through puberty, he laughed, he cried, he felt joy, he was tempted. The Bible says in Hebrews 4:15, the Message paraphrase, Jesus is not out of touch with our reality. He's been through weaknesses and testing. He's experienced it all but the sin. He was fully human, just like you or me, except that his humanity was not contaminated by a willingness to go against God. But Mark 2 also makes clear Jesus is fully God. He is able to forgive sins. He is able to make right the wrong of going against God's heart. In Jesus Christ, humanity and God were completely united, so that any person who follows Jesus, who commits her or his life to Jesus, is united with God. That's a little dense theology, but here's the payoff. The relationship between you and God can be reconciled. Just as humanity and divinity were united in Jesus, you and God can be united through Jesus. Just as humanity and divinity were united in Jesus, you and God can be reconciled through Jesus. Jesus is the union of God and humanity. Some people have accused Christians of fuzzy math for saying that Jesus is fully God and fully human. I don't think it's fuzzy math. I think it's keen imagination. I grew up thinking that boxes could be spaceships and sticks could be swords. As a teenager, I believed Dickens, that it could simultaneously be the best of times and the worst of times. And so I am convinced that Jesus could have been and actually was and is 100% God and 100% human. The world is not the machine that I thought it was. It was not a clock just wound up and left to run. The world is a work of art created by God. And though it is full of order, it is also full of wonder and full of beauty and full of mystery. God created us in God's own image. And thus, human beings, you and I, have an immense worth. We have incredible value, and it's woven into us. It's knit into us. But we are not robots. And so we all choose in one way or another, at one time or another, to live as if God is dead. We will be in charge of our own lives. We will decide what's right and wrong. We will make our lives count for something. We will find a fulfilling life and meaning while ignoring the one who created life and gives us meaning. And so around 2,000 years ago, the one who created space and time wrapped himself in space and time, came into the human race in the same way that you and I did, attached to an umbilical cord. His parents named him Jesus, and he soon earned the title Christ. Christ is a title. It's not Jesus' last name. And it could be loosely translated, the one we've been waiting for. Jesus Christ is the one that humanity has been waiting for. The one who would reconcile the broken relationship between God and people. The one who could heal the broken relationship between God and you. That's who Jesus was and is. Because this healing is not just for the people who were alive then. Jesus died on a cross and rose on the third day from the dead. He ascended into the clouds and once again waits outside of space and time, still available to all of us and planning to return one day and make all things new. Jesus Christ is not just a historical figure. He is God wrapped in human flesh. He is the picture of the God that we cannot see. He is the center of the universe, and he holds everything together. And he wants to be the center of your universe. He wants to bring healing into your life, and then he wants to bring healing to the lives of others through you. This account in Mark 2 tells us two things about the healing that Jesus brings. First, it tells us that faith is the catalyst for spiritual healing. Faith is the catalyst for spiritual healing. Do you remember how we defined faith earlier? We said that faith meant trusting that Jesus can heal. This is plan A, and there is no plan B. Faith is the catalyst for spiritual healing. Trusting that Jesus can heal. This is plan A. There is no plan B. If you need spiritual healing in your life today, you can cook up a lot of different plans. You can decide that you are going to be good enough and make God love you. Or you can try to feel guilty enough and maybe God will feel sorry for you. You can ignore your need for God and hope that it will go away. Or you can say, there is no way that God could love me. And you can hang your head and you can never look up into those eyes that are looking into you. But none of those plans work. The only plan A, the only viable option, is to trust Jesus to heal you as a gift, as something that you cannot earn, as something you do not deserve. It's available to you no matter what you have done. Jesus Christ says, I will heal you. I will reconcile you to God. I will give you a new spiritual bill of health. Trust me. Put me at the center of your life. And maybe today is the day that you need to trust Jesus. You need to move him into the center of your life, or maybe today is the day you need to move him back into the center of your life. And start this new, whether it be school year or just rhythm of life, with Jesus back at the center of your life or at the center of your life for the first time. The other thing that I want to point out about Jesus is this. Both spiritual and physical healing are important to Jesus. Both spiritual and physical healing are important to Jesus. Jesus cared about the entire man on the mat, not just his spiritual condition, not just his physical condition. He cared for his whole condition. And so the man on the mat left the encounter with Jesus forgiven, but he also left with his spiritual situation changed, but he also left with his physical situation changed. Because before the encounter, the mat carried the man. But after the encounter with Jesus, the man carried the mat. It was a complete reversal of his physical situation. As a church, we try to follow Jesus' concern for both spiritual and physical well-being. Yesterday, as some of you were being forced to walk around this fine town as part of orientation, We joined two area churches in washing feet and giving away shoes at the Ada Jenkins Center. Caring for those who are in difficult circumstances, caring for the physical needs of people matter. And today we worship God, and we encourage you, if you are spiritually hurting, if you are spiritually confused, if you are searching, consider Jesus Christ. Consider the spiritual healing that he brings. The truth is, Jesus talked enough about hell to make a Southern Baptist dance. That's my favorite line in the sermon. Jesus talked enough about hell to make a Southern Baptist dance, and he talked enough about loving the poor to make a kind-hearted atheist say, thank God. He cares deeply for both spiritual and physical needs. He cares deeply for both spiritual and physical needs, and he asks that his followers would do the same. Let me tell you a little bit about me. If we're going to become friends somehow, you might want to know something about me. When I was 12, a trusted adult friend taught me that I could not try hard enough to make God love me. I could not be good enough. I could not live up to any standard. I was not on God's playing field. I simply needed to trust him to heal me spiritually and to put him at the center of my life. And that was plan A. And there was no plan B. And so I did. And even at that age, I found great life and great meaning in that decision. I found myself becoming less focused on me and more focused on others. I found myself being changed for the better. And though change is not always fun, I knew that it was a good change. I have a capacity to love God and to love others far beyond what I would have imagined. My natural drivenness has become channeled in ways that benefit others and not just me. Jesus has truly transformed me, and he continues to do so. And then at the age of 20, when I was between my sophomore and junior year at Davidson, I lived in one of the poorest neighborhoods in Memphis, Tennessee, and I worked with teenagers there. And I discovered in that neighborhood that God is not simply concerned with people's spiritual health and their spiritual lives, that there are systems and prejudices that were keeping these teenagers from experiencing life as God made them to live it. Jesus cared about the spiritual lives of those teenagers, but he also cared about their physical lives. And so I needed to care about both. So that, yes, I could teach them about the Bible, but I could also commit myself to the mercy of providing for physical needs and the justice of working to make right systems that had gone wrong. And that's a little bit of my own encounter with Jesus, where I first came to him thinking somehow I could be good enough to make God love me. And I found that it wasn't in trying to be good enough, it was in letting go long enough to put God in control of my life and to put him at the center. And as that happened, I slowly realized that God wasn't just concerned about the people's souls and people's spiritual lives, he was actually deeply concerned about people's physical well-being. So that washing the feet of kids at Ada Jenkins and giving them shoes is not a nice thing to do. It is part of the very heart of God. Over the next couple weeks, I'm going to let some other people here at Lake Forest Davidson introduce themselves to you and how they have encountered God. But I want to wind down our message today. I want to wind down this exploration of the man on the mat by asking a very simple question. Why does any of this matter? It's a good question to ask sometimes. What does any of this have to do with you? What does any of this have to do with the possibility that you will encounter Jesus? Well, I've got some good news and I've got some bad news. Which do you want first? The bad news. Good. If you had said the good news, I don't know what we would do because the slides are in bad news first order. The bad news is this. Your life needs healing and our world needs healing. The bad news can be summed up in those two statements and they are related. Most of us are more attracted to one or the other, but you cannot have one without the other. If you admit that your life needs healing, then you should also admit that our world needs healing. because you are a part of the world. And if your life needs healing, then you do things that hurt the lives of other people. You're hurt. You need healing. And so your sickness sort of rubs off on others. And maybe it's how you lash out at somebody or at a friend or a coworker. But for whatever reason, because you need healing, our world needs healing. But the reverse is also true. If you can admit that our world needs healing, then you have to come to grips with the fact that, again, you are part of the world. And it would be a very arrogant thing to say that the world, oh, except me, needs healing. Or the world, oh, except people who look like me and think like me and act like me, need healing. If the world needs healing, and it does, you share in that need. The bad news is that you need healing and the world needs healing, and that those are related statements. You cannot have one without the other. Now, I wish it were not that way, but it is. I wish there weren't so much pain, but there is. I wish orphans were not exploited, but they are. I wish you could stop drinking too much through your own power, but you can't. And so the bad news is that your life needs healing, and our world needs healing. That's the bad news. The good news is this, and it far trumps the bad news. Jesus Christ is the healer of lives and of this world. Jesus Christ is the healer of lives and of this world. If your life needs to be different, I know a person who's more than a person who heals lives. Whether you are working hard to earn God's love or you feel like God could never love you, I know someone who heals lives. Trust him to heal yours. If you want our world to be more compassionate, if you want our world to be more just, to be more loving, you can try to be a Lone Ranger hero, or you can join someone who cares about the hurting far more than you do. You can join someone who cares about you far more than you do. Trust him to heal you so that he can bring healing to others through you. Because those of us who follow Jesus, those of us who have faith, those of us who have trusted Jesus to heal us, those of us who have put Jesus at the center of our lives, those of us who have put Jesus at the center and make everything else revolve around Jesus, those of us who follow Jesus are healed people, not perfect people, healed people who leave a trail of healing. By trail of healing, I do not mean the circus that is religious television where people are falling all over the place. That's next week. By trail of healing, I simply mean kind words, just action, compassionately telling others what God has done for us, washing the feet of the hurting, washing the feet of the broken, caring for widows and orphans in their distress, inviting a spiritually searching friend to church with you, leaving behind a trail of healing. And so for those of you who follow Christ, I leave you with this question for your reflection. Would people describe your life as leaving a trail of healing? Would people describe your life as leaving a trail of healing? Jesus does not want the biggest faith-related imprint you make to be that of your rear end in that chair. Jesus does not want the biggest faith-related imprint you make to be your rear end in that chair. He doesn't want you to be known for your holier-than-thou hypocrisy. He wants your life to leave a trail of healing. And I pray that God would make that true of you, that he would change you one day at a time so that your life would leave a trail of healing. caring for people in their physical distress and caring for people in their spiritual distress. Our hope for Lake Forest Davidson is that it would be a place of healing, and that as a body we would leave a trail of healing. And we would love for you to help in that effort. As you look around, at about 9 o'clock, we had, I think, 5 circles set up. And we thought, we want to have enough chairs out, so we'll put out a few extras. So as you look around, you can sort of tell, we are going to move to 2 services in September. We're not going to make you fight big crowds. We're going to have room for you to bring spiritually searching friends. But let me be real frank. When you move to 2 services, this is what happens. Your number of children's ministry workers has to double. Your number of setup and pack up people, our transformation team who make the school into a church and a church into a school, double. Your number of greeters, double. We are not going to double this thing on the backs of the same old people. So if you are here today, you're a follower of Christ, and you decide this is the body I'm going to attach to, in your chair there is an orange form, or somewhere near your chair there's an orange form. It's called a share sheet. We want to know how you're going to share. We want to know how you are going to contribute to the healing of this place, to being a person whose life leaves a trail of healing, whether it's loving a kid, whether it's setting out a chair that a hurting person can sit in, whether it's saying hello to somebody or giving somebody some information about what to do. We want you to be a part of us. We don't just want you to be someone who comes in and sits down. If you're on a spiritual search, you can come in and sit down all you want. The minute you put Jesus at the middle, the bar goes up. And I do not apologize. We want you to be a part of this. We want you to share the gifts that you have. And so if that's you and you're a follower of Christ and this is the body you want to attach to, or maybe you're a spiritual explorer and this is the body that you want to attach to, we'd love to have you find a way to share that your life might leave a trail of healing, that you would join up with us. For those of you who are spiritual skeptics or spiritual explorers, I want you to reflect on this question. Spiritually speaking, what is your plan A? And is there a plan B? I don't have like a monkey behind the curtain on this one where you answer a certain way, I'm going to hook you in somehow. I really want you to know that when we say we expect spiritual explorers and skeptics to be here, it's not every week trying to hoodwink you into something. I really want you to think about this question. If Jesus Christ was God wrapped in flesh, or if that's what people are saying, then I would encourage you to investigate him. Many of us in this room have done exactly that. We are not all lemmings just following off a cliff. And we have arrived at the decision that trusting Jesus to heal me and then to heal through me is plan A, and there's not a plan B. And I want you to explore that. And the way to start is to just start with the question, spiritually speaking, what is my plan A? What am I banking on spiritually? What is plan B if that doesn't work out? And I will say that if either plan A or B is to seriously figure out who Jesus is and why it matters, we want you to be a part of us. We want you to be here. We want you to make Lake Forest Davidson part of your regular routine. And we think that will be good. We want it, and we want you to reach out to us that we might be able to help you in whatever way that we can. That was the encounter of Jesus and a man on a mat. And I hope that somewhere in the midst of that and the 3 more encounters we'll look at, you won't simply learn about Jesus. You will somehow encounter him in a new way. Let's pray together. Lord, I thank you for the people you've brought into this room today. And for whatever reason, you meant for all of us to be here. Probably your sense of humor.